After Alex had turned on the camera light, a panic wave went through the flock. He saw a long, dark hall full of de-beaked, derailed hens in tiny cages, cackling and screaming. A sudden coldness hit him at the core, and he took a step back. It was like a scene from a utopian horror movie.
My name is Henrik Vilenius, and I'm the author of the Rise Up trilogy, a young adult coming-of-age story about Hashim, Alex, and Mariam confronting real-life issues like climate change, corrupt politics, animal cruelty, and racial and gender equity.
Six. The skinny worker kept on drying his forehead with the toilet paper as he sat on his bunk bed and watched his mates stuffing their few belongings into their bags. He was already done with his. They had been told that they would move to a new location somewhere in Ohio. Nobody was surprised by that. Yet everybody was nervous and knew that something was wrong. But they had learned that with the gringos, you do not get to ask questions. Reaching inside of his shirt, the skinny worker touched the blue necklace given by his grandfather. The smooth surface of blue beads had always had a calming effect on him, because wherever he was, they connected him somehow to his ancestors. He knew he was in great danger on many levels. Despite being an uneducated farm worker from the western highlands of Guatemala, he could still recognize the symptoms of bird flu in hens as well as in humans. And he had all the signs of infection himself, like a sore throat, muscle aches, and diarrhea. Not to mention that the previous night, he had seen with his own eyes what would happen once you became a liability to your masters. The skinny man heard footsteps from the corridor and lowered his head like all the other men in the room. The security chief stepped into the room and said,
"Let's go. The bus is waiting."
He stood up along with the others.
"Not you, Ramon. You stay," the security chief barked.
Ramon sank back to his bed and leaned forward, resting his lower arm on his thighs. After his roommates had left, the door was locked from the outside. He drew his shoulders back and took a deep breath. He wasn't afraid, though. His grandfather had appeared in his sleep the night before, singing to him about the hero twins from the oldest Maya myth. It was about the sun and the moon and the eternal fight between good and evil. He could see how everything was interrelated and connected with divine power. As he contemplated his role in this eternal struggle, he took out a screwdriver from his backpack and hurried to the adjoining bathroom. Using a stool, he reached up and released the locking mechanism that prevented the window from opening wide. Then he threw his bag out and heaved his thin body through the narrow window frame and landed on the ground. The pretty girl from the Golden Locket jutted her chin out to stop the trembling, but it only got worse. Camila could feel on her the eyes of her mother, Amelia, who sat next to her in the minibus, clutching her bag. The worst thing was the uncertainty. Last time she saw Angel was the previous morning before he went to work, and he was quite sick then already with a terrible cough. Amelia had said that maybe the boss had taken her husband to the hospital, but why didn't he come and say goodbye before he left? Fingering her golden necklace, she thought about their plans. They had been saving money for 4 years. Soon they would have enough to leave this god-awful job and return to their mountain village, buy a small farm, and start a family. As Camila leaned back in her seat, she spotted Ramon, her husband's best friend, running low towards the gate. Perhaps he knew where Angel was. She was about to stand up and go out, but her mother's hand kept her firmly in place. Then their eyes met. When Ramon gave a curt nod with a grave face, Camila understood her husband was dead, and silent tears started running down her cheeks. As the security chief opened the gate and walked towards a white Prius parked further down the road, Camila saw Ramon slipping out of the compound and dashing to the woods. Hashim stared at the windowless barracks.
"Where are all the chickens?" "Inside, in tiny cages,"
Miriam responded.
"And this is called Mary Farm?"
he said and cocked his head. Alex lowered his window down and pinched his nose.
"Oh, Hashim, did you just..."
"No,
Yet he cupped his nose and sniffed, unsure if he had farted accidentally. He couldn't think of anything more embarrassing.
"It's coming from there,"
Miriam said, and pointed to the farm. Alex jerked his head back.
"Oh, from the chickens? How could they stink so bad?"
Miriam winced.
"If you have thousands and thousands of hens stacked on each other in tiny cages, this is what you get."
Hashim crossed his arms over his chest.
"Why do you always blame me for..."
"Hello? Who loves beans?"
Miriam sighed.
"And why do I sometimes feel like I'm surrounded by kindergartners out on a field trip?"
Hashim smirked. Again, he had fallen into the trap set by Alex. With Alex, you always had to be on your toes, which made life a lot more interesting. Then, his heart skipped a beat as something hard hit the roof of the car with a bang. A nasty-looking face appeared in the passenger side window, barking.
"This is a private property. Get lost!"
First thing Hashim noticed was an ugly scar running down the side of the man's face. Judging from his light complexion and black hair, he could very well be from Egypt or any other Middle Eastern country. However, there was nothing on this guard with those cold, deep-set eyes that would invite Hashim to reach out.
"This is a public road,"
Miriam said, seemingly unruffled. Then the guard turned his attention to Alex.
"You better take that sand nigger girlfriend of yours away before something bad happens."
For some reason, Hashim didn't feel offended by those vile words, and then it hit him. This man was trying to distract them. Then he noticed through the side mirror how a skinny Amerindian man was running into the woods as if he was fleeing for his life. However, Alex was falling for it as he was taking slow, steady breaths, glaring at the guard and ready to open his mouth. Hashim leaned forward and put a hand on his shoulder. With a smug look on his face, the guard straightened his back and banged the roof one more time. Hashim whispered in Alex's ear,
"Look at the side mirror."
From the way Alex focused his eyes, Hashim concluded he had spotted the man.
"Check the courtyard behind the fence,"
Hashim continued in a barely audible voice. This time, Alex would see farm workers being herded to minibuses inside the compound. These two moves didn't take any more than 2 seconds to carry out. Keeping the angry look on his face for the guard, who leaned down to take a peek at him, Alex waited a few more seconds before turning to Miriam.
"Go!"
She hit the pedal and the hybrid car lurched forward. Hashim glanced through the tinted back window and saw the guard turning back and heading towards the gate. It looked like the Amerindian man had made his escape unnoticed. Drawing in slow, steady breaths, Alex kept his clenched right fist hidden between the door and the passenger seat. Anger moved in waves inside him. Thank God for Hashim. Without his friend's intervention, he could have done something very stupid. Like many white boys, he had never heard such a vile racial slur firsthand.
"Are you all right?"
Miriam asked. Alex squeezed his eyes shut.
"That asshole. He's gonna pay for it."
"Don't. It's not worth it,"
Miriam said.
"Hell yes it is."
His chest heaving, Alex massaged his left temple to ease the pounding headache. Was racism something that Miriam and Hashim had to endure on a daily basis?
And was that why they both seemed so cool about it? "I don't want you to do something stupid. I should have filmed it and put it on social media. That's how you fight these people."
"I can't just..."
"You can. Please, do it for me. Otherwise, they win."
Miriam reached out to touch Alex's hand, but stopped midway for a moment, till her palm gently landed on his fist before she drew it back. Their eyes met, and Alex could tell that she meant it. As they hit the coastal highway, Alex saw the Manhattan skyscrapers hovering above Staten Island. Maybe the reason Miriam and Hashim had liked New York so much was its diversity. Although there was a sizable Muslim community in their predominantly white hometown, these two different ethnicities led relatively separate lives. His mother had tried to change it, though. Being born and raised in Jackson Heights, the most diverse neighborhood in the United States, she had fiercely defended racial equality. She didn't care if it offended some friend, colleague, or stranger in their white working class neighborhood. And he was his mother's son, and he could not leave it alone. Something strange was going on in that egg farm, and he would get to the bottom of it. He would show that damn guard that there was a price to pay for insulting his friends. As they reached the bridge connecting Staten Island to Brooklyn, Miriam tuned the radio to the only classical radio station in New York. She had learned music appreciation from her father, who was a patron of the local symphony orchestra. Mahler's Second was the right one to lift her spirit up from the mundane world. Alex leaned forward to view the suspension cables reaching up to the sky.
Did you know that the Verrazano Narrows Bridge was the longest suspension span bridge in the world at its time?
She glanced at Alex, who was leaning forward to get a better view of the structures. It had always surprised her how Alex could jump from one emotional state to another, often the opposite one, in a matter of minutes. Maybe that was a survival skill after all the tragedies his family had endured, or simply a gift from God. Taking Alex to see the egg farm had been her last-ditch effort to stir things up, give him something to write about. She wanted to stop him from moving back to the Midwest, fearing that their life trajectories would get further and further from each other. They would meet less and less, until one day, they would disappear from each other's lives. The idea itself was so daunting that she had to stifle it in order not to cry.
"What do you know about Mary Farm?"
Miriam asked.
Just basic stuff, like it's one of the biggest egg and broiler producers in the country, and, it has its headquarters in Chicago.
"Even chickens recommend us,"
Hashim said, imitating a well-known Mary Farm ad slogan. Alex tapped his fingers on his thigh.
Wasn't there a huge merger coming up?
Miriam relaxed her shoulders. She liked where the conversation was going.
"Yes, with Dale Foods, although Mary Farm has one of the worst track records in animal abuse and food safety."
"You serious?"
Miriam felt her life force returning, invigorating every cell in her body.
"And the president will travel to Chicago this Friday and hand-deliver the approval for the merger."
Hashim wrinkled his nose.
"Isn't that a bit too much?"
"It's a payback for all the campaign donations. After the merger, Mary Farm will receive an extra $2 billion of subsidies every year,"
Miriam responded. Alex's face turned hard.
"You're joking."
"Our government gives $40 billion to the meat and dairy industry annually, all to the big corporations," Miriam added.
"And fruit and veggie farmers? How much do they get?"
Hashim cut in.
"I think it was $17 million last year."
"I can't believe it," Alex said. "It's so fucked up."
Miriam paused for a moment, letting what she had just said sink in. She had learned the tactic from watching vegan lectures on YouTube. Now, it was time to cap it off with a concept that she had stumbled upon in a revolutionary book about an invisible belief system that conditions people to eat certain animals and keep others as a pet.
"You know, the whole concept of eating meat is like the Wizard of Oz. Once the curtain is pulled back from the system, its power virtually disappears."
As Alex drummed his feet against the floor, Miriam could see from the gleam in his eyes that he was interested.
"I could set you up with this activist. Her name is Chloe, and she's been asking around about Mary Farm. I think she's connected to some underground animal rights group."
Despite still being planted in the driver's seat, Miriam felt like she was floating. However, she had to keep her wits about her. There was heavy traffic on the expressway, and she didn't want to miss her exit, or Alex would be late for his last day of work. Already a long time ago, she had concluded that men were fickle beings that needed guidance and nurturing, especially in time of crises. Then she saw how Alex's eyes had clouded over.
"What's wrong?"
"Mary Eggs.
That's their brand, right?"
"Yes,"
Miriam said.
Thank you for listening to the Rise Up Trilogy podcast. For more information, go to my website, henrikvillenius.com.